A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Beginners to stage, beginners to stage.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's Backstage at Cry Havoc. I am your host, Laurie Ann Davis, she, her, and today I am joined by Amani Zado and David K. Barnes for this, our final episode, and we are going to be talking about whatever there is left to talk about, also known as wrapping things up. But before we get on to that, please, could you introduce yourselves, just in case there's anyone who doesn't know who you are? Let us start alphabetically. Amani.
Hey, everyone. I'm Amani. I am the director of Cry Havoc. Ask questions later.
Hello, everyone. I'm David. you've heard before as the creator and head writer on Cry Havoc. Ask questions later.
How are we all feeling? Specifically, how are you feeling right now in this moment, David? And why are you feeling like that?
I'm feeling pretty well, thank you for asking. Because at the time of recording last night, I won a British Podcast Award for Best Fiction.
Hey, yeah.
Not for this show, that's still to come.
No, not for this one.
That's in the future, but for Wooden Overcoats. So I got to wear my purple jacket to a nice shindig and meet some BBC journalists. Not be interviewed by them, I just stood next to them at the bar and mentioned I liked their work and they looked scared. But I did it, is the important thing, and now I have a big trophy that you could hit people with.
Yes.
Hooray!
And isn't that what we really want?
Absolutely.
From the arts industry.
If that isn't the goal of podcasting, I don't know what is. And now, on to this show, Cry Havoc, Ask Questions Later. We're coming to the end of the series. When we're recording this, episode 17 has just released. And when this episode that we are recording right now, the second, releases, all of it will be out. How are we feeling, everybody?
Oh, gosh, like such a mess. So sad that it's going to be over soon. I can't believe it. And also just kind of relieved that it's turned out as well as it has.
I'm just relieved.
Overwhelming sense of relief.
Yeah, I think it's turned out so, so good. I'm really proud.
Amani gets her life back.
Maybe that's what we could title this episode.
This episode, yeah. I mean, I can't remember exactly when you were contracted, but it has been, I think, almost to the day, 2 years. Hasn't it, for you, Amani?
Do you know, next month in October, it will be 2 years. Yeah.
Wow.
God. It's been such a long job. It's been such a great job to have in my life for so long. But yeah, I kind of can't believe. I feel like when I signed on to this, we were just coming out of COVID. Like, that's how long it's been.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
David, how has it been for you? And like hearing your characters come to life? Because you've been living with these characters for a long time, right?
Yeah, this is unlike the Wooden Overcoats, where I was very involved in the edits and the things as well, and so gave lots of notes. And you know, that's lovely and all, but it is actually a bit of a privilege and pleasure to be able to just listen to the show like another listener does. Like, I finished with the script in July last year, and I only attended the recording that I was in the best guest performance in the series.
Absolutely.
as the Greek Doctor.
Well, yeah, of course.
Episode 14, high point of the series. But there's still some good stuff to come.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I've just been listening to it as it comes out. And genuinely, I'm really quite astonished at the quality of work from not just Amani, but also the sort of editors, sound designers, the actual sort of the creation of it from a production standpoint. It sounds really expensive. That's what I like to hear. It sounds expensive.
Oh, it's so
really lovingly made. Incredible work across the board there. Like, everybody stuck in the trenches trying to make a scripted audio sitcom and done absolutely tremendous work. Yeah, it's a absolute pleasure to listen to. It's incredible achievement.
Hey. I mean, the temptation to let you just keep singing everyone's praises was strong there.
And so you will, presumably. Let me carry on.
So we've got about 14 minutes to fill. Go for it.
Yeah, sure.
Question that has come up is, like, what are your thoughts on the cast? Were they what you expected? Did anyone perform a character in a way that you thought, I hadn't thought of this person in that way?
Yes, and I think that's important. It's really the first time in quite a while I've written for a series where I didn't already know the actors who were going to play it in advance. And I very much write to vocal rhythms and vocal tones, whether that's been on Overcoats or some Doctor Who, so I know how to capture that rhythm. On Cry Havoc, I found that though I knew some of the actors who were playing parts, like Andy Secombe and Beth Eyre, etc., most of them I didn't, so I very much just wrote to the character and waited to see what would come out of it. And I think it is always a pleasure to see what aspects an actor, in tandem with their director, will bring out. And I think even down to things like accents that we spoke of, I think, much earlier. I think Gaius and Octavia, I think there's a warmth to what they're doing, especially in the scenes of each other. There is a genuine warmth there, which feels like it's on that kind of like a base level with several layers above it of mutual dislike and sibling rivalry. And I think it's genuinely very hard to get that across in performance. I think it's easy to go into a bit too much, we're getting on with brother, sister, or to just go into the hatred. And that's just not fun to listen to. It's very hard to get that multi-layered dynamic going. I think, to be honest, even more than individual performances, what's really come out for me are the dynamics. Especially as a comedy writer, what you're really looking for are what dynamics are kind of working. How do they work? What's the rhythm of those dynamics? And I'm sure we'll speak about them throughout this episode. A particular one for me is, of course, the dynamic between Gaius and Mark. and Leopard as the actual triumvirs and how that goes along. I really like the kind of almost slightly sort of laid-back attitude that Kazim brought to Mark, who's there's a strength, there's a genuine, like, I have been in wars, I have killed people, but at the moment I just want to have a nice day off. I'm quite relaxed. Come on, can't we just leave the work some other time?
Yeah.
There's a strength to Kazim's performance, which is there in a sort of relaxed attitude, whereas I think Harry has found some wonderful ways of trying to get across how irritated, frustrated, at times happy. There are moments of joy there as well. In bits have been really well picked out by Harry and Imani. But the way that they have bounced off each other, and I think as it started off with the sort of young, sort of geeky type character and the big sort of strong jock character, it has gone on a big journey as a listener over the 17 episodes I've listened to, I'm sure the final three. What I had feared as a writer is, will it get stale? Will it just be like you've got your big, strong, slightly stupid character and your sort of very brainy but sort of socially not very adept character? But I think hopefully the writing gave it extra levels, but it's certainly there in the performance and certainly there in the direction. And it feels like they've actually been on the journey. They do feel different now listening to it,
yeah,
as they did at the beginning, which is what you want from a 20-episode show. You'd hope, yeah, that they change in some way.
I feel like they definitely did start maybe with those, like, you could describe them in those broad stereotypes.
Yeah.
And as the series has gone on, there's definitely been more nuance and you get to know them more and more and more. And
yeah,
then, yeah, that's definitely credit to the writing there as well as the performing and directing.
And you need that at the beginning, like an audience, especially on audio, they need to know, what is this character? How do I describe them in a line? And you need the basis. You need a basic, this is the character. Mm. Oh, those are the jokes we're going to get. That's the dynamic. When they're in a scene, Gaius is going to stress out about something. Mark is going to get drunk. Leopardus is going to be silly and fall over. We need to know that. And then you build on that and build on it. And I think, particularly in Gaius, the moments of, I think there are times when he chuckles at a joke that he makes, which is not necessarily the script. That's pure performance. You go, yeah, absolutely. There are moments you go, yes, you do have fun. It can't just be a stress head all the time.
Yeah.
He gets little moments of fun.
And yes, you would laugh at your own jokes.
And he would.
Guy,
he's,
yes,
that sort of person who'd laugh at his own jokes.
Yes.
As I do.
Imani, how's it been for you? I guess because you've known the characters for a long time as well, and you cast the actors. Mm. But were there any interesting twists for you with the dynamics between them? Because I suppose we didn't do chemistry tests, did we? So everyone was cast and then put together.
Mm, let me remember now. I definitely did chemistry tests between actors going up for Octavia and Charmian.
Ah, great.
Now I'm trying to remember if I actually got Sarah Lambie and Sarah Aga together or if they were reading with other people. I actually can't remember now. And I feel like I might have done one also between Sarah Lambie and Harry for Octavia and Gaius. Oh gosh, I honestly can't remember now. Maybe I was just like picturing them in my brain, how they fit together so much that I invented an audition where they were reading together. So I didn't do a chemistry read between Beth and Kazim. And I thought that the two of them worked really well together as Mark Antony and Fulvia. That kind of meshed together really well. And it's a relationship that, you know, it's not like the main relationship that Mark has in the series. As in, you know, we don't see him spending tons and tons of time with Fulvia in the series, but we track them throughout the course of the series. And it was something that, yeah, I just like really bought. I felt like, yes, you guys are delivering this. I get the two of you as a couple. I see how it works. And I also can see how maybe one day down the line, this is going to somehow stop working. And I thought that that came across really well. I thought also the three triumvirs, like together, that was a chemistry test we did not do that just turned out to be magical, the three of them together. And I think the thing that for me that was really fun was maybe moments where the actors just felt so much like their characters, like where it just kind of meshed so well together. Like Harry Roebuck put so much, you could just tell that he put a lot of prep into his work, like came to every recording and I knew that he'd like figured stuff out and was still adaptable to whatever direction I might throw at him. But I could see the preparation. And with Kazim, it was very much like spontaneous, like turn up. Well, that was the feeling anyway. I don't know, maybe he would disagree with me and be like, no, it seemed like spontaneity, but I put so much work into that. And so forgive me, Kazim, if that is the case. But yeah, he came with this kind of wonderful sort of spontaneity and, yeah, feeling of having
of having rolled out of bed, which is actually like really hard to convey while still hitting all the like emotional points that you want to hit, you know, that it's not just lazy.
Yeah.
It's been nice with Aaron as Antilus. It's been, again, sort of a lovely journey there from the early episodes of sort of being his father's shadow to that sort of the genuine delight when it's sort of getting involved in the theatre. Particularly when I think the episode where they're trying to do a play and they have to keep like rehearsing it over and over again. But even each time they do it, Antilus still sounds to be very happy that he's getting to do some acting. It's just a lovely sort of, everyone else is getting really tired and he's a little bit, but he's still clearly trying to do a very good job because he's finally getting to do some proper acting on stage. And you think, it's just these sort of moments there that these characters have gone on, which is delightful to listen to. And the dynamic between Charmian and Octavia is another one. I think I said actually to Marnie at the time, and as the pirate episodes came out and those subsequent episodes, like the romantic angle, it's very easy to just put in a script to go, there are a couple of romantic and you get onto all the jokes and stuff. And then we actually get a performance and the listening to it, especially on headphones, and the intimacy in those scenes, you know, and the sort of the romance. And even at the end, I think when they first kissed, the end of 12, and I thought, blimey, this is actually... God, this is quite steamy for one of my works. I'm not entirely sure. I'm just, gosh, this is far more than I'd anticipated. And that's just what a sheltered life I've led, quite frankly. But
was that Octavia Bray's influence?
I think this is Octavia. This is Tom and Tom Crowley. I mean, absolutely, yeah. Tom and Octavia and Marnie clearly sort of leaning in and just, you know, puffing on a cigar and going, I want sex in the sea, loves. All right, give it some sex.
I'm really glad this impression of Imani has made a comeback. Excellent.
And of course we're going to, because I'm just listening to it, going to the time of recording, I just heard 17, so we're really ramping up to the point where everything starts going wrong and there are murders and panic and everything. And even that one, 17, I think, oh yes, there is a real sort of sense of, yes, look, you know, it's been sort of fun and games and drama and everything, but it is actually getting to quite a dangerous level. And I think the scenes with Kazim and Lara as Cleopatra, Lara especially, who's managed to maintain throughout the series the sort of, I am really annoyed at what's going on, but I'm just about keeping my cool. And it's got to the stage to go, I don't care anymore. I'm so angry and annoyed. And it's still but keeping that sense of status. It's not like somebody who is like falling apart.
Yeah.
It's someone who's so angry that their status is actually rising and rising, and so can say to Mark, sort it out. You've got to do something about this because otherwise I'm leaving, and that's it. And the dynamic between them is there's a danger. There's mutual respect, but still having to earn trust. Their levels in there is something you can put in writing, but unless you've got cracking cast and director to bring even more to it, then the writing is as good as useless. So it's a really good fusion. And I especially think with something like comedy and dramatic comedy, you need every element of the production firing on all cylinders, or it just doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. And it really does, in this show.
Totally. I was going to say, I think one of the things that I really love about Lara's performance also is the ability to keep the character very high status, but also find the humor within it.
Yes, absolutely.
And thinking about, ooh, the scene where, it's just a small moment, but like in episode 16, where she doesn't know where Charmian is, and she thinks that she has maybe succeeded in her assassination of Gaius, and then there's a knock at the door, and she thinks it's Charmian, and then it turns out to be a message from the Triumvirs, from Gaius. And I think that moment of like still keeping the high status and the fact that she is a queen and she is the boss, but then also finding the humor, like the undertone of comedy, I think is not something that's like super easy, actually.
No.
Yeah, she's very good at being commanding, but also there's like an element of a real person in there still, so you still connect with her. And
the trial scene in 17, where you really get a sense of Cleopatra going to a room going, right, I'm gonna have to style this out, and then really doing lots of very swift mental arithmetic and acrobatics to try and sort of get one over on the Triumvirs, which she manages to do, and then it gets out and it feels entirely natural, like the way that she commands the situation, but is clearly also trying to work it out as she goes, like totally bluffing everyone. That's, you know, it's again a hard situation to do, especially, I have to really stress it, on audio alone. On you know, visually, you'd have lots of cues that you could work on, and you could do close-ups and, you know, a bead of sweat on somebody's brow. Audio, you are just purely going on performance and production design. and it's a sequence which I'm sure took a lot of thought in the direction and in the making of it in post as well. It all comes across tremendously well, and I think it's the dynamics there between, especially, you know, Leopard as being very excitable. And it's one thing about, of course, Andy Secombe, who I very much know his performance, is that I always know he'll be very funny, but he will always take a line in a direction I didn't quite expect. Usually giving it a genuine, like a grounded quality in a string, which is odd for somebody who often plays with eccentrics and is going off. But when he cares about something, Leopardus really cares about something. That's what makes it funny. And the moment where he gets deflated and Cleopatra says, like, nobody really listens to you, do you? Then he goes, no, they don't. And he suddenly goes, I retract my testimony. And I think there's a way you could play that just as like slightly, oh yes, I suppose I'm useless and that's it. But there's a genuine moment of pathos as he sort of realises, yes, I am quite useless and I don't want to get in anyone's way. And it backs down. And it's just very funny. Like, the dynamic between him and Lara at the moment is very, very funny, but also entirely genuine. Like, it doesn't feel like actors playing it for laughs. It feels like actors trusting to the comedy that's there in the script, but then playing it real. And I think that's, for me, the best comedy. On the whole, I don't really want people to put on funny voices and just, like, try to go for laughs, unless it's me, and then it's fine.
Oh,
but
yes, of course.
Generally, your actual trained actors who know what they're doing will give an actually committed performance like everyone else in the cast, and they trust where the humour is. And they just go, right, if I trust what the character is doing and what they want, then that'll come out naturally.
Yeah. 100%. I feel like the run-up to the finale is just fantastic. It's so good. And we start to get into, like, quite dangerous territory where it's, like, funny, but it's really dark. And making sure that we're walking that line on every level, you know. I know that David was and the writers were thinking about that a lot at script level. And then also the actors, I know, were, like, doing this whole balancing act. And we've also been thinking about that with the editing team. Laurie, you'll know this, like, where to put the beats to add a little bit more weight on a line and when to, like, pick it up so it's funny. Yeah, that whole kind of juggling act is really fun.
I think the element of darkness is something which is not, like, despite having, you know, Pryor mainly been known for a show about funerals and therefore sort of dark humour, but sort of there's still a huge element of essential warmth to something like Wooden Overcoat, whereas Cry Havoc is there is greater warmth in there, but I think there is a more dangerous quality to it. There is a more cynical quality to some of it. Some of the characters genuinely don't like each other and are trying to hide it, and there isn't as much of the sort of, oh, we're just a family trying to get on. It's a bunch of people who are kind of out for themselves. So it's, and going into the darker area is a sort of material I've not done, hadn't done prior, and so I'm sort of very interested to see how it's pulled off in production. But every production I've heard so far has been impeccable, and Amani, I know, has been incredibly excited about me hearing the last few episodes.
Yeah, it's so good.
I'm
sorry that we couldn't do this after you've heard them all. I wouldn't be able to edit it in time.
Absolutely, no. Yeah. That's absolutely fine. No, I'm just genuinely looking forward to it because I know there's so much to come. I know there's, you know, Charmian and Octavia sort of essentially sort of breaking up, but I know there's obviously a lot more to do there. I'm looking forward to the bit where the Triumvirs are sort of arguing and Fulvia comes in and somebody's head has been dropped on a desk.
Oh, God, it's so funny.
I can't wait
it's
to
so
hear
funny.
That sound effect.
And then there's, I suppose... There's the subplots which are, I suppose, more sort of in the warmer side of the Palatine players, like coming together and trying to rescue Charmian, and that kind of that is one of the places where there is probably the most genuine family dynamic, which is something I often do, where the best family dynamics come from people who aren't actually related, and people who are related to each other tend to not get on terribly well at all. But I'm looking forward to, like Quintus. I know Ben Garrison, I'm fairly sure this was his first time ever doing audio and audio drama, and I certainly wouldn't know it to listen to it, because it's a very confident performance, very, very funny. He's certainly gone back and watched up Pompeii and Carry On Cleo, because he's got some excellent bits of Frankie Howard and Kenneth Williams in his voice. They're mixed up into something which is uniquely his own. And I'm looking forward to it, especially in these last two episodes where, like, you know, we go from a jangly collection of theatre troupe doing silly things together to a close-knit group of people who are trying their best to do something actually quite dangerous. There is a huge amount I'm looking forward to that builds on the 17 episodes of production excellence I've heard so far. So as a writer, as I say, who's done bugger all for the last year when it comes to the show, whilst Amani has been working on it every day, it's been very nice to sit back here doing nothing and just listening to a wonderfully made show coming out.
Quite quite a nice foundation you handed over.
Yeah, I felt like we kind of tag-teamed, right? Like, you front-loaded a whole lot of work, and I was kind of enjoying, mostly enjoying that, and then I kind of stepped in, I feel like, for the second half. But I was going to say, I haven't talked about Ben enough. Like, I actually wouldn't have known that either, as the director, that this was his first audio job. He is so, so good. And yeah, I love what you mentioned there, David, about obviously the rescue attempt that they do to get Charmian out of prison. One of the things that Ben and I talked about was how Quintus is like, it's so easy for Quintus to be, you know, like a pretty straight comedy character. Yeah. But he manages to find this like depth and heart in him, in the character. And I remember feeling also and talking about how actually I think that Quintus is one of the bravest characters actually in the series. He's the one that, along with Charmian, that has so much to lose and to risk. You know, his life, their lives are worth so much less than everyone else's in the series. And I feel like he does get to be a hero in small moments, maybe, but actually like very high impact, like figuring out the plan and to save Charmian and going in with Antelus being the one there if something goes wrong. And also later when Mark kind of storms into the final show and he realizes that everything is going tits up, you know, getting Charmian and Octavia and immediately realizing that Gaius has spotted Charmian and that this means that both Charmian and Octavia are now in trouble. I think, you know, he's repeatedly putting himself on the line, which is contrary to, you know, what we maybe see back all the way back in like episode 9 pre-pirates or during the pirate kidnap of Octavia. I think it's like, it's so fun to see him on the one hand being like, yes, I can't do anything here. Like, go ahead and take her, to then later being like, oh no, actually I have an idea, I have a plan. We can do something about this. And I'm really bored with you just feeling sorry for yourself and moping rather than getting off your ass and trying to save your lady love. I think he's so cool.
I remember listening to, I think it's one of Sarah Shackett's episodes, episode 14, where Charmian and Octavia are going on a date together, and there's the scene in the middle where they and Quintus, you know, come across somebody, you know, a child essentially being auctioned in the poorer area. And again, I think it's a mark of an excellent team when you have a scene like that, which is very much drama. It's a very much dramatic scene, but it doesn't feel like an abrupt shifting of gears, or it doesn't feel, oh, this is a scene that's coming from a different show. All the performances feel just as natural as when they're doing the comedy and when they do the drama, and that's when you think, that's when you really can play with the material, when you feel confident in jumping genres and going back and forth, because those scenes there, I thought, were very, very powerful. And particularly for me, class dynamics are a very important theme. I know cultural dynamics are really important. Those are things me and Amani talked about a lot before even scripts are written. And I think it comes across that those elements of characters like Charmian and Quintus, who are very much on the sort of the poorer level, as Amani said, the most to lose. And I when those sort of characters butt heads, I mean, there are numerous arguments between Charmian and Octavia, which again, in lesser hands, could just turn into two people speechifying at each other or just spitting bile at each other. But I think both Sarahs know how to pitch it so that they remain conscious of what their status of the character is, but where the character is trying to sort of push into something else and then retreating from it. And it's a terrific dynamic. I do think, I remember listening to it, that it felt to me that after 8 episodes of, because all the characters are still quite disparate from each other in the first 8, and then they all coalesce in the pirates episode, suddenly it feels like there is a situation to really bed down in, and all the characters can sit there and really just interact to work out things. And of course, as a writer, you think, oh, should that have happened earlier? Should I have sort of brought the characters together much earlier to get to that point? Or does it work better that we have 8, you know, a bit of a build-up of all the characters doing their own thing and slowly coming together, and then that situation that brings them together? Because as a writer, usually you assume you've done it wrong, and so you're always looking for the things you should do better next time. It was a particular high point for me, was those pirate episodes. I mean, I loved every episode, but the pirate ones were fast, and of course Ryan was delicious accent, fantastic work as Sextus.
Just fantastic, so delicious.
I was
accent.
Totally fine editing that, totally fine.
It's a hard job when the character is meant to be like, your job is to come and be effortlessly cool.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that and not come across as either arrogant or fake, really. Yeah. You know, it's a hard part to do. Not many people can play the part of Johnny Bravo. But Ryan plays, it came up with a natural swagger, charisma, but also sensitivity. and a joy. Again, I think it's the moments of joy. Like he seems to be genuinely delighted that Charmian and Octavia, Cosme might be an item and he can push it along. It makes no difference to him whether they do or not. He just wants to. And there's a joy in the sort of fun of being with people, which I think is very important. And the best moments, I think, for me of the show, generally throughout, are when characters enjoy being with other people. Whether it's enjoyment because they like them or enjoyment that they want to set them up. But when the characters, even at the heights of government or in a gladiatorial arena, can also have a bit of fun, you know, taking the piss out of somebody or spending time with someone, having a quick kiss in a wardrobe, I think those bits are really fun. These are ancient Romans. These are people we know from history books. It's hard to make people from 2,000 years ago feel like real people. And the way I think you do it is by giving them moments of joy and sadness and tenderness which feel very current, which you hope to do in the writing. And then when you get it very much from the cast, and you want actors going to give you what you thought you were going to get and at least 30% extra you never would have imagined. And I think I, as the head writer on this, I feel like you've got that consistently from cast and production throughout.
Yeah, I was going to say about Ryan, it was so fun. I mean, all the actors had to do this for their characters kind of across the board, quite a lot of like shifting, as you said, between like drama and comedy. And I feel like maybe with Ryan it was the most extreme because he, you know, Sextus is meant to be genuinely like so terrifying, and he kind of like panther creeps into the room at the first time we meet him, and yeah, that just like gorgeous voice and accent. And then later on the like shifts, it was funny, we found when I was spotting those episodes with Sam that we actually, Sam had to go away and write kind of a new bit for Ryan. Ooh. We'd like written, he had written a sort of general Pirates theme that had like a softer version and a more like action-based version and then kind of like a cool version, but we needed something like extra to match Sextus's like real like danger vibe and to give us kind of like chills. And Sam kind of like overnight went off and wrote this just like that chilling piece that's so good. And yeah, I feel like the music in the pirate section is one of my favorite bits across the series. Oh, yeah. There's so much range and scope, like that bit at the end of episode 12, like the pretend sword fight between Antlers and Sextus.
Yeah.
That's like so cute. I just think it's like...
Absolutely.
It's like so sweet. And also, it's one of the bits in the series that I just feel like we really nailed the like cinematic aspect so well. Like shifting from Mark and Gaius and the rest of the gang on the docks to like... and kind of like flying over the sea up onto the deck and being there for the fight between Sextus and Antlers, which then we realize is a pretend fight.
Yes.
And the way that they're having to shift between their little convo and the like scripted lines that Octavia's written that's for the benefit of their audience down on the docks, and how the music just kind of lifts that and the sound is like, I thought like we were doing something quite complicated there. Like I'd asked the editing team to kind of give us that sense of traveling across, like a kind of camera pan from on the docks up to on the deck. And wasn't really sure it would be possible. It's not like, it's not a big distance. It's not a totally different audio world, you know.
Yeah.
You're still hearing the sea, you're still hearing wind and waves and sails and people nearby. But yeah, they just managed to give us that sense of shifting back and forth.
Yeah.
And then Sam's score comes in to just kind of lift that. And I was just like, oh my God, this is Pirates of the Caribbean. Like-
yes. The action sequences and those set pieces, like episode 3, which has a similar thing of people on a dock watching stuff going on a ship. And I think Leopardus sets himself on fire and has to jump overboard. That's a fantastic sequence. Or even when you're going, it's sort of a set piece which isn't so much of action based, but is more about mood and atmosphere. So the cultists, I think in 7, which is like very funny. And I think Pip Gladwin doing a superb role there as a cop leader with a sort of very deep, forbidding voice. And then I mean, oh, actually, I'm just quite fine. I'm here to just get drunk.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. And the bit where you think, oh, somebody might get sacrifice, I might get killed here. And you know, that sort of, again, it's the switch from comedy to drama and back again without it feeling like, oh, we've just changed channel. And I think that's, again, music, pacing. I think pacing is very absolutely crucial. And speaking of those other performances, I also think there is a particularly great performance that does need talking about, which, you know, this I believe the performer pops up a few times throughout the series, but I think reaches a real pinnacle in their ability in the orgy episode, playing a particularly sultry voiced lady who wants to bite Dice's bottom. It's a terrific vocal performance that raises the hairs on one's neck in a very good way. Hey. And it's just, I wonder who that was. I just don't know who
we'll never know.
But he did a terrific job.
We'll never know
who did that, but absolutely tremendous.
Do you know what? That's a lovely example of Amani's wonderful directing and knowing of the characters and things, because I turned up and in my head, she was a Julie Walters kind of person, like Julie Walters in Mamma Mia.
Yes.
And then Amani's like, no. No, much nicer than that. She's like, why don't we try this? And I was like, oh, I see.
You know, actually, I'd agree. That's one of those, actually, you know, talking of like performances are different to how you might imagine. Again, I think I also, I can see how this might be played as someone who's sort of like, almost like stepped, like Barbara Windsor in a Carry On film, sort of stepped out and is sort of like much more, you know, dirty chuckle and up. But listening to it, I thought, oh no, this sounds like somebody who is very high up in status, is certainly enjoying an orgy and wandering around and seeing all these sort of rich people, and with a sort of sultry quality. I think, yes, this audibly puts Mark on the back foot again, which is a lot of fun. Kazima's Mark suddenly seems, much like he's terrified of Cleopatra and her sexuality in the earlier episodes, as soon as Valeria starts him saying what she wants to do with guys, I want to bite him on the bottom, and enunciating that, he sounds terrified. And I think that's very funny. Again, Mark just doesn't know what to do about this. He goes, right, sure, please get on with it. I don't want to know. And again, you go, you're a guy who's led armies into battle, but, you know, a woman's sexuality is enough to utterly terrify you and make you want to walk away. Again, that's a dynamic which is really fun. And it's an interpretation you have in the script. It's the interpretation you went with. And I think it's the right one, because I think it's really funny.
Yeah. Thanks,
it's
Amani.
It's a great laugh.
It was funny that, actually, because Lowry has played several parts in the
series. Again, thank you.
And I think all, like, fantastically. I mean, I thought your Lavilla, the paparazzi, was so funny. And that was a part where you literally just, like, turned up and did it. And I was like, yeah, perfect. We'll have that. Thank you. And same with Basilla's. It felt like a character you were really comfortable with. It was funny with Valeria. I remember I think when I asked for a Marlene Dietrich impression, and you were like, oh God, I don't know who that is. And I was like, oh God, how am I going to get this across? And anyway, all that to say that it was kind of challenging in the moment, you having to kind of figure out what I was asking for. And I know you walked away from that not fully convinced about it, but literally, it's so good, and I've heard so many good things about it. How does it feel for you now, having heard it? Have you heard it, like the finished one?
I haven't heard the final episode yet.
Okay.
But when I edited it, as you know, Amani, I listened to it and I was like, let me re-record this. I'm not happy with it. And like, normally I quash that feeling when I listen to myself, but with this, like, please, I don't know. And then I came back to it a few weeks later and I was like, oh, it can't have been a few weeks, but however much later, I was like, oh no, okay, actually, I think Amani's right, it's fine.
It's terrific.
It was funny when you said that, you like sent me a message, you were like, I hate this, I don't want to be like a diva, but please can I send a different option? And I was like, oh gosh, I wonder how it turned out. I remember feeling like it was quite good, but let me listen to it. And I was like, you know, like totally open to sending alternative versions. And then I listened to it and I was like, literally don't know what she's talking about. It's so bloody good.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of those sort of, you know, guest performances that helps carry the tone of a whole episode. Because, you know, this is we're doing a kind of like sort of sex comedy type episode. And of course, it's a British sex comedy, so everyone's terrified. So you do need some characters in there who sound like they belong. You know, the best, you know, who sound like they ought to be in a Roman orgy having a genuinely good time, and who was going to terrify some Mark. And again, you've got Andy Secombe wandering around just going, I'm having such a lovely time. It's a great sort of contrast of tones and styles, which builds up a very good picture, especially on audio.
Yeah.
It's a very funny episode, especially when you've got like Charmian Octavia having, you know, big sort of emotional important conversations here. We need the farce to be happening, but it can't be too much of a gear change. And I think if it'd be gone from like drama here to, it's the same, like a Julie Walters sort of type, we'd accentuate comedy, but the way it currently is, I think it's very funny while still being real. And I think that's incredibly important. Yeah. I'm sure that's probably one of the episodes that everyone thought, how are we going to do this?
How are we going to
do the orgy one?
Yeah.
And make it tasteful and funny and not seedy and also something we can actually put out to potentially family audience.
So my mum can listen to it. I don't know if she's listened to it yet.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that has made me think of two things. One, that is such a great advert for how fantastic a director Armani is in like keeping the whole vision in mind, so that, you know, because coming in and being like, I think this character should be Julie Walters, and then someone be like, that might work in isolation, but not in the context of all of this. And that's lovely evidence of that. And that also makes me want to pivot just a little to talk more about the editing team, maybe. And I'm just going to name check them, because I don't know if we've done that.
No,
like
not
in
properly.
Entirety in these episodes.
Let's do it.
So for the vocal cuts, you have me and Nico.
Hooray.
Did like timing cuts between us, and then Nico and Annie did cleaning of vocal cuts between them. I don't think I cleaned any of them. I might have cleaned a very early one. I can't remember. And then Katie started with the soundscaping and the sound effects cuts, and then Meg joined. So we've had Katie and Meg on soundscaping throughout, and then Kathy on mastering, and Sam, of course, who we have mentioned quite a few times, doing music. And I just wanted to name check them all because
they are fantastic.
I'm aware that I'm in there, but like everyone's done a really, really great job. It's been a joy to hear things.
Yeah, it's so important for a series which is incredibly ambitious in its size and outlook and what it's trying to do. Yeah, I think the production team on the editing and the music and all of that's been tremendous. It just sounds absolutely the business. It sounds like a very, very expensive, very visual, but done on audio show, which is really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I echo your point on Armani holding up the vision of a series. I know how difficult, even just, say, on my previous work, I'd make maximum maybe 8 episodes, and I'd trying to keep like an island of characters in my head is really, really hard. And that's just in scripting. To hold 20 episodes worth of characters and stories and moods, and also that's not just some scripting, that's actually from, I also have to get a bunch of actors to do this. And, you know, I mean, most of them will have brought something to it, but to work with them to develop it exactly into what we need is a very, very difficult job, I would imagine, having not done it myself. So again, hats off to Armani on doing that for 20 episodes and over 2 years. from very early scripting to final sort of mastering and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think having not done audio before, it's been just like so interesting working through the whole process. Obviously, there are some aspects that are quite similar to filmmaking and others that are very different. I think I was like so impressed with the way you and Nico did the vocal cuts. Like, I think maybe the first episode we worked on together, Lowry, because you started off with vocal cuts, and then Nico came in a little bit later.
Yeah.
I feel like you, and I don't know how much this is to do with your experience or if it was also influenced by the fact that you played multiple characters in the show and you were also producing, so you were sitting in on recording, so you heard a lot of the performances, and if that gave you a natural instinct for like the timing. But I thought that I remember the very first episode, you know, that you cut and sent to me, and I was like, oh, sorry, I have to swear.
Yay.
There. I have like barely any notes. This is so good. And similarly with like Nico, when he came in and then the two of you were kind of alternating vocal cuts, I was like, wow, just like hit the ground running, finding the like rhythms that lift the comedy and the moments that like weigh us down where it's more dramatic. I was just like, just really impressed, because I was expecting it to sound quite different between like your edits and Nico's edits. And I think that, I don't know if he listened to your edits and so was like, oh, okay, let me do that, or if you just both kind of had a similar instinct.
I mean, you had also chosen the takes, right? And I think, I suppose Nico and I have worked together for years now, so maybe it makes sense that we have a similar style, I guess. I don't know. I did not anticipate that this episode would involve me wanting to hide my face behind my pop filter so much.
Well, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about you much, and you have been very involved in the series, so.
Yeah.
I have been. I'm going to be like, what happens now?
I know, right?
Sorry, it's done.
Yeah,
and similarly for like Meg joining the team, because Katie started out editing and just did, this fantastic amount of like world building, creating all of these like details and levels. I mean, I think like
I think people don't realize, unless you make podcasts and audio dramas, like how much work goes into them.
Yeah.
Like the, I think literally for episode 20, Katie said that there were over 200 tracks that she was juggling. I mean, just like trying to imagine how she's looking at that on her computer screen makes me want to go cross-eyed.
Oh yeah, that makes me want
to cry. Good Lord.
And for Meg coming in and kind of like jumping straight into that and delivering on the same level was, yeah, just incredible. And yeah, I think she did a fantastic job on that.
I haven't worked with Meg very long, but something I find with both Katie and Kathy, because I've done quite a few episodes from various shows over the years talking about editing, and I just find every time I talk to them about editing and what they do, I learn about something new that I hadn't even thought about that they think about.
Oh, for sure.
Does that make sense? Like, it's just the depth of knowledge there and skill is astonishing.
It is so interesting. Like, I mean, Kathy has taught me a lot, because I end up going to Kathy and being like, why doesn't this sound the way I'm expecting it to sound? And she'll be like, oh, okay, we need to like ask them to do this. And I'm like, okay, yes, I didn't have the language or the knowledge to know how to actually ask for this thing. Just, I think we've been like so lucky with this editing team. They've just done an incredible job pulling lots of magic tricks out of the hat to make this series sound just like so detailed and nuanced and gorgeous and alive. Yeah, and 3D. Yeah, I think just amazing. Gosh, I feel like this has become kind of a like awards thank you speech.
I mean, we started with an award.
So, well, yes, and we can finish off there. Thank you to, and who am I forgetting?
Thank you to my mum for listening.
Yeah, literally. I mean, I feel like we're still leaving out so many people. There are other actors playing like small parts that I like always am like, must shout out. They were so, so good. Yeah. All these like, you know, like sounds like one-liner parts. Like Rufus and Drew. God, have to be like my favorite double act. Just love them. But yeah, anyway, I guess we are coming
we
to
are
time
coming
now.
To time. And like, so a very, very quick a pitch for a spin-off for some of the specific characters, and it can be a Rufus and Drufus buddy cop movie if you want. Mine is the Paladine players meshed with Sextus's pirate crew, and they're a touring company.
Very good. I love that.
Very
love
good.
Yeah, I just want Basila to meet Sextus, basically.
Oh yes,
of course.
Very understandable.
I think the Palatine players is a. I think there was a point very early on, like really early on, in sort of conception of the series, where when we're sort of wondering, is the politics thing going to work? Is having a series based on the upper echelons going to work? Where I just say we could pivot and make it entirely about the theatre company and have an entire series about the Roman theatre company, and I still. You could very much easily have a sitcom about a Roman theatre company, specifically this one, and seeing what they've been up to. I want to see, you know, sort of Quintus desperately trying to sort of keep a company together with Basila and Mascus and Antulus and everyone. I think that could be a great little series.
Mascus finally getting a lead role.
Finally getting, and I'd also like, even though it's not really, I think cooking with Lepidus.
Oh.
I don't know what a cooking show starring Lepidus would be like, but I think it should exist.
Do you know what? I made a promise to myself, because through all of this backstage series, I have just been like raving about Andy constantly. Yeah. Like, and I promised myself I wouldn't in this episode, but it's so good.
I could see you like biting your tongue, right? Literally.
And I want a kind of like Antiques Roadshow starring Ellie Dickens as Attia, just trying to find erotic pottery.
Yes, 100%. Oh. I feel like a spin-off with Attia would just be brilliant. Oh,
I'm so glad you mentioned her. Yes, she's fantastic.
Ellie Dickens just walks in and just makes the part.
Beautiful.
Love
it's
it. Fun.
It's because, again, I've not heard the very, very ending, but it is a series that is sort of like ties off a lot of plot lines and then sort of reaches a point where it's clear, like, you know, this is a jumping off point to other stories that could go on for quite some time. Because it's history, which is handy. But I did sort of jot down the sort of, you know, in the world which there was, the series continued to like another season. I do have the ideas of what that would include if you wanted the very quick 30-second pitch.
Go on.
Yeah, go on.
I think that's the one where we'd have Mark Antony going out to the east and spending time with Cleopatra and then getting involved in lots of capers there, realizing he's got in way over his head. Octavia has also managed to smuggle herself aboard the ship so she can get over there, maybe see Charmian and do things there. That leaves, of course, Quintus characters tearing his hair out back in Rome, wondering what to do with the Palatine players. And following history, Gaius and Lepidus, who are now basically sort of running Rome together while Mark is larking about in the east, have to deal with more pirate incursions from Sextus. Again, that happened. And which leads into my favourite bit of the history of this, which is that when Gaius left to try and deal with the pirates, Fulvia launches a coup.
Oh, yes!
To try and take Rome, which is absolutely there in history. Fantastic bit of history.
Amazing bit.
Those are all the sort of things that, if there to be more of the show, those are the ideas in the old notepad, following history with a bit of extra stuff thrown in there because it's fun.
Love it. Love Beautiful.
It. Love it.
Right. Amani, we didn't actually get your spin-off idea. Do you have one?
Yeah, do you know, I love the idea of Rufus and Drusus, the double act, going around ancient Rome and just creating lots of trouble, banging heads together.
A buddy cop show with Rufus and Drusus.
An ancient Roman buddy cop show.
Causing more problems than they solve.
Yeah.
Yes. Rufus and Drusus.
It's beautiful. Right. I'm going to wrap it there. I'm going to get real. Is it doing this series has been absolutely wonderful. This backstage one, like, it's been so nice to like get to talk to everyone. And you two especially. I have such high opinions of both of you. I think you're very excellent people and excellent at what you do. So there. Yeah, David is basking.
David is basking.
It's true. It's true. We are wonderful.
You are.
Yes.
Yes. I hope that that isn't too unbearably gushing. But it is time to say goodbye. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us for all of this. I hope you've enjoyed this series. I hope you've enjoyed Cry Havoc itself. If you have, tell other people about it. Tell them to listen because it's great and we're really proud of it. And lots of lovely people have worked on it. Any closing thoughts?
I just wanted to say thank you, Lowry, for all your work on this series. It's just been amazing having you produce and host it. You've been just a lovely host coming up with wonderful questions and keeping an eye and guiding the chats, I think, and also then editing them and making us sound actually like smart and coherent, which is an incredible skill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's because I have such experience with editing myself and making myself sound like I make sense.
I'm like, gosh, we sound stupid when you don't edit us.
That is not true.
I'm looking forward to, after a good full 2 years, of Marnie Zardo seeing the sunshine again.
Hey. I kind of now want to sing Hair to exit. Okay, yeah. I think this is going to be our final goodbye. So let us all together say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye. Thank you.
Backstage at Cry Havoc is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 4.0 International License. It is directed by Amani Zardot, produced by Laurie Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner. This episode was edited by Laurie Ann Davis and Catherine Rinella. Thanks for listening.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.